upholding scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And greetings from Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, Editor-in-Chief, and today we're going to cover three stories that I have cherry-picked from this last week. Today's broadcast, by the way, is a day late because I was on vacation on Monday, and so we'll pick up the slack today. The first story that I want to cover is one that comes straight out of the United Nations, and it's called Complete Streets. You might have thought that the street in front of your house would look better if it was a complete street, meaning that they'd fill the potholes and maybe widen it just a little bit to make the lanes not so narrow. But Complete Streets, according to the UN, has a totally different concept. And the title of this story is Complete Street Program Are Sweeping Over American Cities. And indeed, they are. They're being brought down through the unconstitutional councils of governments that appear all around the country, imposing smart city technology and smart city transportation policies on cities across an entire region. And I wrote at the top of this article, Complete Streets promotes bicycles, scooters, foot traffic, light rail, etc., to the detriment of private transportation. In Pittsburgh, bike and lane usage will be zero in the winter when temperatures hover around 20 degrees. Complete Streets is a global program inspired by the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. The Smart Growth America website states, and this is a direct quote from their website, Complete Streets are streets for everyone. They're designed and operated to enable safe access for all users, including pedestrians, bicyclists, motorists, and transit riders of all ages and abilities. Complete Streets make it easy to cross the street, walk to shops, and bicycle to work. They allow buses to run on time and make it safe for people to walk to and from train stations. The substance of this article is indeed about Pittsburgh, but it is a very good example of on what's going on in cities across America. The article states, at the time when many of Pittsburgh's streets were built, top travel speed was dictated by horses, and later, a trolley car at full tilt. Now, drivers attempt to maneuver these same narrow, complicated streets at 40 or 50 miles per hour, said Karina Ricks, director of the city's Department of Mobility and Infrastructure. That really is a wildly dangerous situation when we have very soft human bodies mixing in with these three-ton metal objects, she said. We share these streets. We're part of a larger community, and one of the cardinal duties of being in a community is to protect and preserve other community members. The city's 2020 capital budget allocates $17.7 million to make streets safe for all users, nearly triple the available funds of previous years, contained within the Complete Streets program, that's in quotes. Listed projects include installing pedestrian signals, traffic calming, bike infrastructure, and general streetscape improvements. The intent is to rationalize the roadway, Rick said. Our streets are very chaotic, she said, so drivers are stressed and the travelers are stressed, so we're not really giving people good ways to get to the many job opportunities and amenities that we have. The city's long-awaited bike plan will be central to resolving that chaos, said Ricks. The new 10-year plan, due to be released by the end of January for public comment, will cover both how to close gaps in the existing network and how to expand it. The plan calls for adding more than 100 miles of bike facilities over 10 years, but, quote, we're not trying to wait 10 years, she said. Over the next 2 years, Pittsburgh officials will partner with local nonprofits, Bike Pittsburgh and Healthy Ride, who will be supported by Colorado-based nonprofit advocacy group People for Bikes to design and build 60 miles of new, updated bike infrastructure. A connected system will be safer and allow more people to choose cycling as a viable means of transit said Eric Borer, Advocacy Director for Bike Pittsburgh. But perhaps most importantly, it will add predictability to the road network. Quote, bike infrastructure isn't just for bicyclists, it's also for drivers, he said. When you create a space for everybody, it just makes the whole street less chaotic and makes it more peaceful. Pittsburgh is part of a larger national shift in how cities approach bike infrastructure. The last two or three decades saw cities make piecemeal additions of a bike lane here or a trail segment there, said the director of local innovation with People for Bikes. Now, this story will be interesting if you have a complete street project in your city or town, or if one is being contemplated. If so, you should definitely read and print this article, study it, and take it down to your local civic leaders and tell them why you do not want to have complete street philosophy imposed in your city. Now, there's nothing wrong with bicycles. Don't get me wrong here. There's nothing wrong with scooters, per se. But what's happening across America right now is taking our useful street system that we already have and converting it into something that simply cannot and will not be used by the majority of people in the community. Of course, automobiles can be used every day of every year, except when there's extreme storms taking place, perhaps like tornadoes or cyclones. But in the case of bicycles, they are only usable when the weather is fair. People simply do not ride bicycles when the temperature is below zero. They will not ride bicycles in driving snowstorms. They will not ride bicycles for distances that exceed their ability and their time to get there. So transforming streets to accommodate bicycles for everyone is basically a waste of money and a waste of time. There certainly are a few people that get to work riding their bike, and they should be allowed that privilege if they so choose. But to force that mandate on everybody else is simply not economical, not fair, and basically it's an aggravation to all the rest of the people in the network that have to use their cars. The second story I want to cover today has to do with education. This is a very important story. It's written by my friend Alex Newman, who happens to be a very prolific writer and author and expert on education. This article is titled CFR Pushes Central Planning to Fuse Education with Economy. Now, of course, this concept is not new, but it keeps getting worse. We've had the complete upheaval in education with Common Core Education Standards. Before that, the big deal was President George W. Bush's No Child Left Behind, and it all amounted to the same thing. It was fusing education with the economy. This is wrong. This is never what education was intended to be by anyone in our country's history, not ever. I commented at the top of this article, the CFR's education policies are virtually identical to a historic technocracy that wanted to develop education as a, quote, continental system of human conditioning, close quote. This is the same mentality that produced alphas, betas, and deltas in Huxley's book, Brave New World, that was written in 1932, by the way, at a time when technocracy was housed at Columbia University in New York City. It was the talk of the town, not only in New York, but across America and in Europe as well. Huxley has some good ideas that came out of the technocracy movement. That book became a bestseller. Nevertheless, it's a twisted view of education. In fact, it does away with education altogether and turns to conditioning instead. Alex wrote in this story, the globalist-minded Council on Foreign Relations is urging state and local officials, as well as other leaders, to transform the education system, claiming that looming changes in the economy and the workplace will require workers who are properly educated and trained for the new paradigm. The effort seeks to reverse engineer every part of the education and workforce training system and ensure that components are, quote, all walking in lockstep, close quote. In interviews with The New American, two of the CFR task force members involved in developing the recommendations warned of major problems ahead for America if the organization's ideas were not acted upon and soon. However, also in interviews with New American, education experts, critics of technocratic governance, and leading lawmakers all sounded the alarm about the CFR's proposed schemes. One expert argued that the educational policies advanced by the task force resemble the tools used by totalitarian regimes, such as the communist dictatorships of the Soviet Union and China. Another expert condemned the ideas as moving America toward technocracy. that would be me, by the way, a prominent educator expressed shock that the report made no mention of the very real and very serious problems with the current education system. And considering the CFR's membership's long history of betraying America and liberty around the world to advance globalism and tyranny, lawmakers warned that there are very good reasons to be concerned. According to the CFR's task force report, dubbed, quote, "The Work Ahead, Machines, Skills, and U.S. Leadership in the 21st Century," close quote, America will be facing massive changes in the years ahead. Especially concerning to the CFR's panel behind the report is the growth of automation and technology, which will displace large numbers of American workers across a broad range of industries. All of that is true, of course, but any effort to sell drastic changes, including even bigger big government and an enormous array of new unconstitutional policies, must have at least a kernel of truth to sound palatable. This effort is no exception. The plot is audacious and comprehensive. In the article entitled, quote, "CFR, U.S. Needs More Mass Migration, Bigger Welfare State," close quote, the New American explored the enormous transformation that the powerful CFR is pushing relating to social welfare programs and immigration. In short, under the guise of preparing America for the future, the CFR argued that the U.S. government must massively expand the size and scope of government, ranging from health care and retirement to increasing immigration. Sweden and Denmark, two of the nations with the most bloated governments on earth, are praised as successful models. Interestingly, even while warning of huge looming job losses for American workers, the CFR report advocated a surge in immigration. The other key component of the CFR's Work Ahead agenda deals with education. Indeed, the CFR report claims America needs dramatic so-called transformations in the education system. Much of this must be driven by government, the globalist group argued. Simply waiting and hoping that the market will sort out the challenges, according to the CFR report, is not an adequate response. It was not made clear why. Rather, the CFR claimed only that failure to provide the education that apparently helpless Americans supposedly need for the future would be dangerous. It was also not clear why Americans could not take responsibility themselves for their education. In a phone interview with the New American, CFR Task Force Director Ted Alden said the goal of the effort was to, quote, "make it a top national priority to prepare the American workforce for the changes that are coming." According to Alden, the thing that the United States did better than any other country was pushing ahead with tax-funded education for everyone. In the early 20th century, the U.S. led every country in terms of moving America into secondary education, then into post-secondary education with the GI Bill, he said when asked why the market system could not deal with the coming changes. A lot of this came from state and local government. This is a familiar history that we handled well in the 20th century. So among the CFR recommendations in this article, he lists several. I'll read a few. Ensure that college and university are within the reach of all Americans, presumably by either forcing taxpayers to pay for it all or by shackling young Americans to ever greater levels of debt they cannot pay. Link education more closely to employment outcomes. A change in thinking is needed from seeing education and work as distinct and separate activities to considering them as closely linked, the report continues. Provide expanded counseling for students to set them on successful education-to-work paths, since apparently government knows what's best, what path those children should be on. The government schools should also lay out, quote, guided pathways to direct students towards what the central planners believe will be needed in the future. Collect more data on students to be disseminated by government on everything from education to career to make all the central planning work. Education should expand and improve its own data gathering and dissemination, the report says, adding that the private sector must also be conscripted into this big data scheme. Concentrate greater emphasis on lifelong learning, which will, quote, require changes in behavior by employees. This means adults need to be constantly ready and willing to go back to the government for more so-called education to keep up with changes in society and economy. Insist state and local governments do a better job of central planning and incorporating their ideas about what society and the economy need into the education system. Other of those policies taking a page out of the Soviet playbook, authorities must, quote, undertake detailed skills assessment of the population and the workforce needs of local employers, the CFR task force argued. Devising and implementing appropriate education options depends on a solid assessment of the workforce needs of local employers and the education and skills level of the state workforce. Also required, quote, close collaboration among state governments, educational institutions, and employers. And lastly, have the federal government create lifelong learning accounts to provide money for everyone to pursue lifelong learning. This would be, quote, a national program to help finance mid-career retraining, the CFR said, without citing any provision in the U.S. Constitution that would authorize such a program. There's a lot more to this story. If you're interested in education, this is a story that you absolutely must read. And as I said before, education never had these kinds of collaborations in mind. It never had any such idea that the government would specify what the workforce needed and then move to educate or to train people to fulfill those jobs. That simply was just never there. This is a product of globalization. It's a product of big tech, who wants workers to suit their needs as cheaply as possible. And by manipulating the education system, they're able to do this. It's just that simple. Children are not something to be socially engineered or mentally engineered for anything. The idea in Huxley's book, by the way, Brave New World, was that through genetic engineering, which of course we don't have today in this realm, but genetic engineering was used to create the alphas, the betas, the deltas, etc., to fulfill certain levels of work within society. At the bottom of the heap were the deltas and the epsilons, who, to use a colloquial term, typically dumber than a box of rocks, because they would never protest if they didn't like the scrummy work that they were assigned. They would just do their job and think everything was great. Well, this kind of social behavior modification is absolutely unacceptable in America and basically anywhere else on earth as well. No human being that is a human being would think this is a good idea. Now, the global elite, on the other hand, think it is a wonderful idea. The last story, again, has something to do with education, but this time Arizona State University. The title of this story is ASU Leads the Nation, an Unconstitutional Smart Region Scheme. I wrote at the top of this article, regional governance is the archenemy and destroyer of a, quote, Republican form of government as guaranteed to the states by the U.S. Constitution. ASU started the Smart Region Initiative that will impose smart city policies throughout the region. The president of ASU, Dr. Michael Crow, is also chairman of the board of trustees of the CIA's private venture capital firm. You heard me right. The Central Intelligence Agency's private venture capital firm, NQTEL, INQTEL. SRI is essentially modeled after NQTEL to provide tech incubators and sandboxes to advance experimental smart city technology and policies throughout the Phoenix region. SRI is also partnered with the Maricopa Association of Governments to help impose its policies upon 22 cities and 4.2 million people while bypassing duly elected city officials. To say that SRI is a swarm of unelected and unaccountable technocrats is an understatement. Furthermore, SRI is attracting other technocrat companies from all over the world. Now, just to put this in a wider context, if you're not from the Phoenix region, you might say, who cares? But I'm telling you, people are watching from all around the world to see what happens in Phoenix, Arizona, because ASU is creating the template for all other regions around the country to implement smart city technology. And if you don't think this is serious, just consider the outcome of this. Every city in America, every town in America has an elected city council. The citizens of each such community elect the city council to take care of city business. A big part of city business is to protect the people within the city, of course, but also to make decisions and set policies that will be a benefit to the people in the city. Well, the concept of regionalism bypasses the concept of the local city and the local town. When you set regional policies, you're basically telling all the cities, this is the way it must be done. You will not be allowed to vote on it. You will not be allowed to approve it or disapprove it. This simply is going to be the way it's done. This is regionalization. This is globalization. This is how it works. This is how it worked in the Soviet Union. and this is how it's working in America. When your city or your town is cut out of the decision-making process, you have just lost sovereignty and your right for self-determination as a city or town. This is wrong. This is anti-American. It's un-American. It's anti-constitutional. And it's just patently wrong, because all of these big tech companies that are racing to Phoenix right now to partner with ASU and Michael Crow, as well as with the other members of this consortium, they're going to do this in every city across the country if they can get away with it. Why bother with pesky little city councils, most of whom are ignorant in their eyes because they don't understand the technology anyway? Who needs them? Let's just run over the top of them and get done what we want to get done and let them suffer the consequences. So here's what this particular article has to say. And by the way, this was a press release issued by the company concerned here, Alteryx. And so I've included the entire press release in this article. Now I'll read it. Arizona State University and Alteryx, it's a company traded on the New York Stock Exchange, by the way, with the symbol AYX, revolutionizing business through data science and analytics, today announced a collaboration to accelerate smart city program development in the Phoenix metro area via advanced analytics solutions. Dean Stocker, CEO of Alteryx, discussed the partnership during his keynote address at the ASU Smart Region Summit hosted today in Phoenix. One side note that I'd mention just from this first paragraph is that Alteryx has been sold the idea that they are going to participate in smart city program development in the Phoenix metro area. In other words, they know that they'll be able to skirt the city councils and just get things done. The article continues, higher education institutions are at the forefront of technical innovation and have immense responsibility to empower success of our future workforce, says Stocker. Today's summit and the university's Smart City Cloud Innovation Center are indicative of ASU's leadership in both areas. Alteryx has a proven track record of enabling smart city solutions across the globe, and we are proud to partner with an organization equally dedicated to driving remarkable social outcomes. Together, we are putting our powerful analytics platform into the hands of those capable of creating the cities and economies of tomorrow with data science and analytics. ASU, recognized by U.S. News & Report as the most innovative university for the fifth consecutive year, opened the Smart City Cloud Innovation Center, or CIC, in March 2019, designed to improve digital experiences for smart city designers, expand technology alternatives, and spur economic development. As part of the CIC, pronounced KIC, ASU faculty and students can leverage the Alteryx platform to solve submitted challenges that will help enable smarter communities in Phoenix, preparing students to solve real-world business issues and driving social impact. Again, a sidebar, the paragraph before this talked about driving remarkable social outcomes. This paragraph talks about driving social impact, and I would ask, what right do these companies have to even determine what social impact they should have? It's not up to them to decide what social outcomes should be or what social impact that their technologies should have. The article continues, quote, it is rare to find industry-leading companies like Alteryx who are passionate about aiding higher education institutes like ASU in our mission of social embeddedness, said Lev Gonick, Chief Information Officer at ASU. Through this collaboration, our students will gain access to a modern end-to-end data analytics platform that will not only allow them to discover and implement smart city solutions, but will also set them up for success as they graduate college and enter the workforce. We're excited to explore additional possibilities with Alteryx as we partner across the private and public sectors to accelerate innovation and drive social good. And I have to ask the question again, what gives these people the right to decide what is socially good and what is socially not good? Of course, they're assuming that they have this right. They're assuming that they are doing everything right and that we should simply just accept what they do because they say so. The article concludes, Alteryx is helping ASU further accelerate data literacy and development of the future workforce via the Alteryx for Good, that's AFG, University Program. which allows educators to incorporate data science and analytics into curricula and engage students in predictive, statistical, and spatial analytics. Learn more about the AFG program and higher education opportunities here. And the word here in the article has a link that will take you to their website, and you can read to your heart's content. This entire regionalization scheme reeks of technocracy. Every marker, every signal that I have ever surfaced on technocracy is incorporated at ASU. And it's not inconsequential, by the way, that the head of ASU, Dr. Michael Crow, is also chairman of the Board of Trustees. No, he's not just a flunky there. He's the chairman of the board of the trustees of the CIA's private venture capital firm, NQTEL. And Michael Crow has rubbed shoulders with all of the venture capitalists in Silicon Valley over the years. He not only knows them all, but participates in projects with many of them. And he's essentially turned ASU into one of the projects similar, in scope at least, of projects that NQTEL has launched over the years, providing incubators and sandbox to advance experimental smart city technology. This sounds like an experimental lab imposed on society itself, and that's exactly what it is. Many specific areas in the Phoenix region will be designated as incubator areas or sandbox areas where technology companies can come and experiment with new things, testing them on the local community to determine whether they're viable or not. And then the promise is, of course, if you come up with something viable, it looks good after testing on those citizens out there in our community that never agreed to that, but nevertheless, they were the guinea pigs. Why, we'll take your technology and roll it out to everyone. That's the promise. This is not American. This is a takeover by big tech. Only people in local communities around America can put their foot down on this and say, no, we're not going to allow anything into our city that has not come through our city council, our elected representatives, by we the people. I encourage you to read this article and again, print it and take it down to your local city, your local town, and ask them what's going on in our community that might be similar to what ASU is doing out in the Phoenix area. And educate them and tell them, don't let that happen here. We want you to be the sole determinant of what happens in our city, not them. And we look to you to protect the citizens of our community. Well, I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next week.